Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dane Todd.
Now, he's Nebraska's doctor for saving shoulders.
I care about your butt.
It's another Husker Home Friday with Dr. Dane Todd, powered by Nebraska Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. The doctor is in the house. Now, with Hooks
and Friends.
Welcome back into Hooks and Friends. Having a great time on a Friday. Hey, Thew, just to update you, I got a text again from a great friend of the show, Coach Todd out there, said the maiden name for Amy Williams was Gusso, G-U-S-S-O.
Yeah, yes, it was, yeah.
And only he is out there, plethora of knowledge. She's the sister of one of the coaches that coaches in the Sox organization.
Okay, all right.
So there's that out there.
That's why also, we have the you listeners. I mean, it's
the 12, man.
Yeah. It's like instant spell check, except with fact check.
They're the human geniuses.
I love it.
Also, I know we're going to get the doctor here shortly out there. Breaking news out there. Sad news to report. Hate to report sad news, but it is I'm being told via every source out there. At the age of 86, Hammer and Hank Aaron has passed away.
Yes.
Hammer and Hank has passed away. That is sad news, man. Being a Braves fan or whatever baseball fan that you are, Hammer and Hank was an icon in the world of Major League Baseball and a true ambassador of the game. He will always, when you ask me, he will always be my home run king when you look at the stats and the way he did it. But, man, what a tough loss for the world, the baseball world, with Hammer and Hank passing away. 755 home runs, 3,700-plus hits, career average of 300. He was a 25-time All-Star. Put that in perspective. 25-time All-Star. Just an amazing 1982 Hall of Famer. But the sad news of Hammer and Hank Aaron passing away.
To even play for 25 seasons is phenomenal. But to be an All-Star for 25 seasons. And, you know, I'm not a Braves fan, but obviously, you know who Hank Aaron is. And, you know, everyone, I think, has that vivid image of when he hit number 700, was it 715? To break Babe Ruth's record, and he's rounding second base, and the lady comes out and just mobs him out there mid stride and stuff. But you know, not only from the baseball standpoint, but I think once his baseball career was over, that Hank Aaron was very active as far as, you know, the civil liberties movement and stuff like that. So the impact that he had in this world obviously went well beyond the baseball field. But Bill, I just one of the greats that was still left around, and obvious thoughts and prayers to his family.
Yeah, sad news, and we'll spend some time next week. We'll get more of that. But right now, Nebraska Sports Medicine Orthopedic, Dr. Dane Todd joining us via phone. Doctor, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
You know, we're good, man. It's modern technology. First of all, is working. As you know, you and I texted. I'm still in quarantine here. Got tested today. Couple day results. You're on the phone. I can visibly see Thew Malone and Will Wilson back in the studio.
Everybody's been on the phone.
Now, wow, you've got a great view, is what you're saying. Couple of good looking guys and a sick mullet there on Will, right?
Yeah, that mullet is in full force. It looks like a little bit like Gardner Minshew's right now, if you haven't seen that one.
Gardner Minshew's, his new mullet is a 10.
But, yeah. Well, Doc, I'm going through a little bit of depression. I mean, everybody we have is either on Skype or calling in this morning. I can't get anybody to come into the studio to save my life today.
I know, buddy. I'm sorry. Well, I'm being selfish and staying back. Actually, probably responsible. And I got my second vaccine on Monday, thank goodness. And so I am laying low until that fully kicks in, and then going to continue to kind of stay away from people like I'm supposed to until we have some idea of of transmissibility after that.
So, gotcha. No, that makes sense.
So I'm going to lay low today, but I'm fully planning on being back there next week, and hopefully Hooksy tests negative and can get back to normal.
Yeah, let's hope it all comes out great. We all tested today. It was a really smooth, easy process. I need my basement back, by the way. My 13-year-old, I am worried she's going to want to move into the basement. I'm a little worried.
Oh, yeah. About I would live it. As I told you via text yesterday, man, I've seen your basement, and then you redid it, and it's even nicer. I'd live in your basement right now, man. Sell my house. I'll just come move in with the kids.
The door's always open for you, Dr. Dane Todd. You know that.
Don't tempt me, baby. Don't tempt me.
I better be careful. I know that what kind of kids I have and maybe how yours act. Maybe we'll just kick everybody out. We'll just own the basement ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Between Harrison and Tanner, they'll be in trouble, man. They're going to struggle.
Oh, man. Again, we're speaking to Dr. Dane Todd. Hey, Dane, I want to kick it off with obviously NFL playoffs are coming up. Only one guy being talked about. Will he play or will he not play? Walk us through the concussion piece, what that's like, if you ever had one, and what the protocols are and the differences maybe between – again, they're going to be as careful as possible. They have, I'm air quoting, independent doctors taking them through the five-step process.
Right, yeah. So the concussion protocol is very strict and regimented. I mean, they did the right thing once all the consequences of the head injuries kind of really started coming to light within the last decade or so. And they do use independent doctors for those protocols, especially at the NFL level, just to make sure that nobody's trying to skirt the system. Because especially at that level, I mean, you're talking about, you know, millions of dollars at stake, right? And so, yeah. You know, as much as everybody wants to be unbiased and do the best they can at the end of the day, right, like it's, you know, that kind of money can make you waver one way or the next, right? And so it's a very regimented protocol where it's a gradual progression of activity throughout the course of it takes about a week to get through. And it starts off with just complete rest. And once you're essentially symptom-free with just resting for about 24 hours, then you can start gradually increasing activity levels. And it works up throughout the course of the week from just, you know, some light jogging drills to more of a normal kind of routine and movement base and practice to actually doing a non-contact practice. And then once you're kind of clear through each one of those steps, then you're deemed cleared to go and recovered from the initial concussion. And a big part of creating that pathway and step was to prevent the second hit phenomenon, right? That post-concussion second hit. And by eliminating or by doing the best we can to mitigate and eliminate that second shot in a short period of time, it really decreases the likelihood of getting another concussion down the road, but also decreases the harmful effects from the first concussion.
Well, Dane, I want to talk a little bit here about step five, and correct me if I'm wrong. That's like live game simulation. Obviously, mm-hmm. let's take Patrick Mahomes for example. He's going through these steps, and I don't think at any point in time this week that he's going to go up against that number one defense for the Chiefs and take hits from them to see if he's ready to go. I don't think step five is going to be found out until he's, you know, under fire in that game. You know, at that point, you know, you still have a chance where, you know, if he does take that first hit, you have that chance of, whoa, okay, he's not ready. You know, now what? How do you do step five, you know, before game time?
Well, it's really more of a an activity-based thing rather than taking hits, right? And so it's not like we put our volleyball players who get a concussion or our soccer players who get a concussion. It's not like we hit them with a 2x4 to see if they can take another blow, right?
That'd be cool, though.
Because that's insane, right? And so it's the same thing with football. Yes, those quarterbacks during the week, in reality, every kind of real football team in the country at the Division I level and beyond, right? None of those quarterbacks are getting hit ever during the week in practice, right? And so you're not lining guys up and making them tackling dummies to see if their concussion's gone, right? You don't test it by beating them up, okay? And so what it is actually getting their heart rate elevated, getting calisthenic work in, getting a normal kind of, not necessarily a scrimmage type situation in, but moving in the pocket and making reads and making the play calls and just doing the things you would do in a normal game for them. And as long as they don't have any symptoms after that, because they've made it through the rest of the week, and then you stress their system further with a harder workout kind of thing, then that's when they're cleared through. But you don't need the contact in order to get through the final step.
Hey, Dane, also walk us through this, because you saw the play. We all saw the play. Did it look like there was a ton of head-to-head or head-to-ground contact? A lot of people believe that whether it be you talk to a guy whose brother was a neurologist that said there was something within the neck, maybe some pressure within that, that caused this.
Yeah, while our skull is very firm and strong, right, and your brain has the ability to wiggle around a little bit, okay? it's not like it's sitting there stationary at all times. And so with just it doesn't necessarily take a direct blow to the head in order to get a concussion. All it takes is kind of a rapid or sudden movement to it. And with that sudden change, your brain can actually kind of more or less, for lack of a better term, bump up against the side of the skull, right? And just by that force of acceleration and deceleration, that can cause a concussion itself. And I think that's more the case with Mahomes, is that he had an event during that play. He just got shook just enough, right, to cause it.
Hey, Dane, I want to ask you a question about A.J. Brown, wide receiver for the Titans. A few days ago, he went on Instagram Live, and he was in the hospital. He was on his bed, and he was explaining that he just got surgery done on both of his knees. And he said he was told that he was done for the year in week two, and he played all year. He even made the Pro Bowl. So what does that say? I mean, even if you're told that you should be out for the year, you could still play if you want to?
Well, sometimes I think he's probably playing a little fast and loose with what he was actually told. Okay, he was probably told that if you have surgery on this now, you're done for the year, right? Rather than you just have to be done for the year. The physicians at every single level, if somebody has an injury where it's going to be detrimental to their health by continuing to play on it, okay, they're done for the season. That's all there is to it. Like with our players down at the university, my high school athletes, my just everyday, weekend warriors, anybody who comes in, right? If they have some problem, some injury that I say, hey, listen, this has to be fixed, it gets fixed, right? Now, everybody's allowed to make their own decision. They're allowed to make their own medical decisions on things, and we just try to guide them the best that we can, okay, to keep them from making bad decisions, right? And so I'm sure I have no knowledge of his actual situation, of course, right? Mm-hmm. But I would bet that they said, hey, listen, you have these injuries that need surgery to fix. We can do it now, and you're done for the year, or we can do X, Y, or Z at the end of the season, and you can play, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there were a lot of caveats there that said, hey, if you don't improve and get back to the level that you need to play effectively, we're going to pull the plug and get these surgeries done, and then you're done for the year.
Dane, along those lines, injuries, and I always find this unique. You typically find out about injuries and stuff that people play through at the end of the season, right? If you haven't seen, they talked about Drew Brees a lot. His wife went to Instagram and talked about this. We already knew that Drew Brees played through, not played through, but he had the 11 broken ribs, the collapsed lung, and things like that. But apparently he played through with a torn rotator cuff, and I believe it was a torn fascia in his foot. How are players able to do that? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Drew Brees and his inability to get the ball downfield this year a lot. But talk about that a little bit, because I did the rotator cuff thing. I know that's not an easy one to be able to perform with.
Right. No, that's a unique situation right there. And obviously the ribs are something different entirely, right? You got to recover from those and the collapsed lung in order to be able to even be remotely safe to play. Okay. The torn fascia in the foot, they're probably referring to as plantar fascia, which is a thick band of tissue that runs from your heel down towards your toes on the bottom side of your foot. Anybody who's ever had plantar fasciitis, it's called, that's what it is. It's irritation of that plantar fascia. And you can tear that plantar fascia. We have athletes who tear it from time to time. And if it tears all the way, it actually doesn't hurt that bad once it's done. Okay. When it's partially torn, it tends to continue to hurt. But that's the kind of thing that while it may be painful to play on, right, it's not really causing any additional or problematic damage to the foot to continue playing on. Okay. So it's one of those, like, are you tough enough to make it through it, and can you do your job effectively with it? Okay. Now, the rotator cuff, especially for Drew Brees, because he's had some pretty extensive shoulder surgery in the past. With a torn rotator cuff, you can have an incomplete tear, which is where it's just partially torn, or a complete tear of the rotator cuff muscle. With an incomplete tear, I always describe the rotator cuff tendons to people as a big, thick, heavy rope, okay? If you picture a big, thick, heavy rope, and think of one that's been being used for 20 years, okay? That rope never looks great, right? It's all frayed on the side and looks, you know, kind of crummy and dirty by that point, right? But it may still be functioning totally normally, okay? Now, as you start to wear away that rope, okay, and you get 10% of the way through it, 20% of the way through it on up, right, it starts to lose some of its effectiveness. When you're talking about the rotator cuff tendons themselves, that 50% number is about, it's kind of like a magic threshold for it, okay? Anything short of 50%, and the rotator cuff tends to still function normally from a strength standpoint, but it may be painful, okay? You get, and it's also not likely to continue to progress tearing beyond that, okay? You get to that 50% threshold or higher, and you get to what we call high-grade partial tears, and those are basically guaranteed to continue progressing on to complete rotator cuff tears. And those are the ones that tend to start becoming even more painful and start to be detrimental to function. Okay. So their shoulder can still function with a frayed or partially torn rope in it, right? Mm-hmm. But it may hurt. Okay. And especially in a case like Drew Brees, okay, where, yeah, he's getting a little older, right? What is he, 42, 43?
Yeah, right? He's up there.
He's starting to get up there towards the age where we start to really think about rotator cuff pathology when it comes to injuries and things, because rotator cuff tears tend to be a problem that our older patients experience, right, our 50-plus group of people. Younger than that, and the rotator cuff is robust enough and strong enough and just hasn't had the wear on it over the years to where injuries to the shoulder tend to not cause rotator cuff tears. Now, are there some really young patients who get them? Yeah, sure, of course, right? You'll see the occasional 20-year-old with one. But those tend to be after big injuries, you know, car accidents, big falls, steroid users, you know, those kinds of things that you end up seeing true rotator cuff pathology in those younger patients. And so in Drew Brees' case, he may have an incomplete tear, okay, that was kind of causing him pain and problems throughout the entire season, right? He could have a full thickness tear right there. And if he did, yes, it would affect the function of his shoulder, okay? But again, that's a problem that could be fixed at the end of the season for him, okay? You don't want to wait forever to fix a rotator cuff tear because they'll get to the point where they're unfixable. But in his situation, depending on when it happened and how much of the thickness was affected to it, it's a real possibility that he could continue playing throughout the year, especially knowing it's the last year of his football career, right? And then get that done at the end.
Dana, want to switch a little bit over to Husker football. It seems like just yesterday the team had made the decision to forego the bowl season, and here we are on the verge of winter conditioning starting up. Personally having gone through the winter conditioning, talk a little bit about the importance. You know, we always talk about the off season and the games are won during the off season. Talk a little bit about the importance of the upcoming 7-8 weeks of winter conditioning, and also for those high school kids that elect to show up on campus early, with the opportunity for those guys to go through that winter conditioning and maybe try and find a spot, on special teams, or maybe even starting in the fall, as opposed to just showing up there in July and only going through fall camp and trying to, bid for some time.
Yeah, so it's extremely helpful to the young players to get into the collegiate system early, especially from a strength and conditioning standpoint. Okay, everybody thinks that they're in great shape in college because they're lifting and they're the strongest guy in their weight room and that kind of thing. And then you get to the next level and you find out all of a sudden that you're, fair to Midland, right? As people would say, in terms of your strength and conditioning prowess. All right. I remember getting down to the university and it was borderline ridiculous how much stronger, the guys in my own position room were than me. And I thought I was a pretty strong guy coming out of high school. Right. So getting into the programs early and doing very directed strength and conditioning training is really important to get those guys strong enough and conditioned well enough to compete at the next level. And so I think it's a big leg up for some of those guys. The other thing that it really provides, honestly, is a transition into college, right? And a complete change in your living situation and environment and responsibilities and everything else. And so if your first taste of college is at the end of fall camp and all of a sudden you have, practice 5 days a week and then game and, Sunday training rooms. Oh, and by the way, now you also have a full class load and, you're completely responsible for, setting the schedule for eating and sleeping and, free time and everything else. Like, I think if you have a spring semester and then the ability to do some summer classes with it to get acquainted, I think it would have been awesome to have done that when I was coming out of school. Now, granted, I enjoyed my senior year of high school, don't get me wrong, right? But if the light at the end of the tunnel is, Zoom class in high school and no activities with your friends versus going and getting started on the next year, I'd probably go and get started on the next year and then take a little lighter caseload throughout, or a little lighter class load throughout college, because I banked 24 hours during my first semester in the summer.
Again, we're speaking to Dr. Dave Todd, Nebraska Orthopedic and Sports Medicine in the house, like he is every Friday with us. Dane, sticking with football a little bit. Obviously, we witnessed, well, maybe we didn't witness special teams last year, whichever way you want to look at it. They have parted ways with the analyst, John Rutledge. No ill words said, but it had to make a change. When you look at that group, man, talk about, you know, we've talked about this with other people about special teams, and I don't really care if it's an analyst or an on-field coach, whatever. That'll be up to them. But when you were playing, who made up those units, and what do you think those units should look like from a coverage standpoint, from a kickoff, whatever it be? How should those units look in your perspective?
Well, they should look good to start with. Let's start there, okay? So let's make them look good, okay? And then after that, honestly, you got to have your, you know, you can't put your quarterback on your special teams unit unless he's holding the ball, right? But beyond that guy, you better have, honestly, a bunch of your starters playing special teams. Okay, the reason your starters are there, yes, is for their primary job on offense or defense. Okay, but there's a reason that they're the starters on offense and defense, and it's not because they're the worst athlete on the field and just happen to be really good at tackling. Okay, it's because they're the best athletes on the field and are really good at football in general. And so your special teams unit needs to be made up primarily of your first and second string guys, and then you sprinkle in a smattering of the younger guys who are really athletic but not quite as, you know, not quite as ready to play fully in the games, right, to take a more active role in the offense and defense during the games. And so that way you have your best athletes and your best players on the field for your special teams units.
Now, I'll ask you this one. It'll follow up to the special teams, and then we'll take a break right after this. Analyst or on-the-field coach?
Yeah, honestly, I'm with you. It doesn't matter to me one bit, okay? All you need is the schemes, right? All you need is is teaching how to do it and doing the schemes, okay? And an analyst can watch the video as well as anybody, right? And they can draw up the plays as well as anybody, and they can scout other teams as well as anybody. And so if you have an analyst helping you out with those situations, right, and you can reserve a coach, you know, an additional coach for the day-to-day offense and defense stuff, then I think I'd probably go that route. When we were there with Bill Callahan, there was a guy he brought in for special teams. I believe his name was Gans. No relation to Joe, but I think his name was Coach Gans, if I remember right, who came in and he gave a couple, you know, did some speaking to us and that kind of stuff. But his big thing was actually special teams, and he came in and reworked some of the special teams coverages and some of the techniques we were using and some of those things, and our special teams got better as a result of it. And so I think that you get an expert or somebody purely focused on special teams only to come in and just be an analyst position, and it frees up a coaching spot elsewhere.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break right here, and when we come back, we'll have Dr. Dane Todd still in the house with us, and then we'll talk maybe a little NFL football coming up and, you know, a lot more from the doctor after the break.